No. No.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a new one?
Yeah, it's pretty good too. It was a lady who had written notes down that Maharaj had spoken, and she wrote it in Marathi, and it had been a book in Marathi for a while, but now it's been published into English as well. I forget what it's called though.
I'm reading, it's not called Meditations with, because
No,
I have that book.
that's an older book. I use that every day as like a morning thing to read, but this is a brand new book that I just saw it on the Ashram feed December 1st or January 1st, I'm sorry. Let's see if
Oh.
I can find it now. And it was just released.
Oh, that's great.
But it is a very nice book. It's as soon as I can. Sorry, wasting all those people's time to get this name of this book, but it is here it is, Shower of Grace.
Oh.
And you can get it in Kindle like right away down to your phone, which is good because Selfless Self still hasn't come out on Kindle, but this whatever I forgot what I told. Shower of Grace, yeah. And it's a brand new book, Amazon.com. I've started reading the Kindle version. It's very good. I ordered the hardback book too because I like kind of laying down at night and reading a little bit of chapter. Right now, I read like a little chapter of Das Boot every night. But I said, okay, this book comes, we'll read that too.
I can't hear you when you say.
I got this little booklet. It's called Menachi Shlok, Shlok.
Yeah,
that's correct. Have you heard that? It's a little booklet. It's 210 verses composed by Das Boot or Swami Ram Das.
Yep.
It's called Verses to the Mind. And it's really neat. I think it was composed by John Norwell and Laurence Ledodier and Linda Phelps. Not composed, but they kind of like put it together. Because John, these are all disciples of Ranjit Maharaj, but they put it together in such a way that they put in some footnotes in it and so forth. But it's actually the verse is written by Swami Ram Das, which is it's good. Verses to the mind. It's really powerful.
Yeah, that was on the Ashram feed a couple of probably about 2 weeks ago. The lady from. Oh, I forget her name now. She just recently started getting our recordings again, but.
Oh, that's Sandy, Sandy.
Yes, Sandy.
Crosby.
Yes, and she had asked on WhatsApp feed, oh, does somebody have this? Actually, I think she emailed, but anyway, she got it. And then I read it from that. I also went out and purchased it on Kindle, but the Kindle version is a lot of broken English. It doesn't flow as nicely as the version that you're speaking about, Andrew, that the developer put together.
Yeah, it's really nice, actually.
Yeah, that's up in the lineage spiritual texts, that Google Drive that has all the different lineage spiritual texts. That's in there now. I think we just put it in there, so.
Oh, amazing that these things are still coming out after all these years.
Yeah, well, this Shower of Grace was, like I said, it was notes that was written down and it was passed around in Marathi. There are quite a few books, actually, that were in Marathi but are not translated into English. And that, I guess, you know, this is one of those books that is now in English. And it's like somebody sitting there listening to Maharaj, jotting down the notes, like many of the books are actually, that they jot down the notes and then the translator. And I think it was the guy, one of his translators is actually who helped translate it. I forget who the author is. But anyway, this is something nice to check out.
Yeah.
I think self-love was also just someone writing down notes, right? One of the disciples, I think. Yeah,
I think so too.
Yeah, or a few of them, maybe. I'm not sure if it was more than one disciple or not, but that was a great book. That was powerful.
That was really good. Yes.
Yeah.
That, and then the earliest discourses. Those two books came out last year. Was the self-love? No, maybe not last year. Self-love has been out a while, but self-love, and then the earliest discourses. Those were the two, like, quote, latest books. I Am That came out on Kindle for a while, and I got it, but now you can't find it on Kindle anymore, so I don't know.
Oh.
And then this book, like I said, I purchased it on Kindle, and then I did buy the one. It's expensive as hell when you do that, because it's like $22 for the book, and then $25 for shipping and handling, so
whoa.
A little bit steep. Wow. But I guess, you know, because it's coming from India right now. It's it's not in America. I'm sure, like, in 6 months or a year or whatever, it'll be readily available on America. Amazon Prime will have it to you the next day. Mine comes in like 6 weeks, and I pay just a lot. But,
wow.
And then those last round of books we all got, the Amrut Leia 3, the Master of Self-Realization Without the Little Feet, all that came from the ashram. They just sent that. That was very nice. They sent that whole package and that we all passed around. That cost nothing because the devotees just sent it to us.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, we're very grateful for that, Jai Guru.
I guess I have a question here. John, do you think that the testing ever stops when, as long as one is has a body, there seem to be these tests, you know, like the tests that you went through at the ashram, you know, food poisoning and riding in a cab at night in the rain and all that kind of stuff. Do you find that continue? Is that, I mean, different? It takes different forms. Not, no two tests are alike. But it seems as though the universe is always trying to come up with situations where you are tested.
I mean, as long as you're identified with a body as an object in consciousness, then there'll be the play of consciousness. And within this play of consciousness is that concept manifesting of testing, of expanding, of growing, of seeking, of, but once you're identified as your selfless self, the formlessness, there's no test, unless it's something that happens that's trying to draw your attention away, and you see it kind of as an afterthought. Oh, you know, I remain with the selfless self. I didn't give myself away for that because I'm formless. I know I'm the space in the room. I'm not the objects or whatever they're happen to be doing, because I know that the world is within consciousness and the consciousness has appeared from presence. And as long as I'm identified with an object in consciousness, then I'm going to see the play within consciousness and identify it as somehow relating to a me. This is not true because it's all occurring within you. So as long as you're identified, as even at the ashram, the experiences that you mentioned, Absolutely. I was identified with a body that was using a mantra that God, through the form of Maramakat Maharaj, had given me to allow me to experience my selfless self. So because I had this identity of I'm a devotee doing mantra, experiencing the selfless self, rather than being as just the selfless self without thought or without experience or experiencer, then the concept of a test, like you said, the cab ride at night, right after someone had said, oh, wow, you know, the cab drivers, they drive really, really crazy in India. You got to be careful. Never get in a cab at night. And then Maharaj says, okay, get in the cab. It's nighttime. And by the way, it's raining too. So, and they had, because that was there was like a terrorist threat or whatever. They closed all the roads. It was just a few cars on the road. And because Maharaj arranged for a car to take me back to the airport, there were very few cars on the road, a lot of rain, all that. But that was a chance to remain with selfless self rather than identify or try and go along with the concepts or the flow of thoughts that may cause some fear. Instead, remaining with mantra. So in a sense, the test was passed. Afterward, you could see, oh yeah, remaining with mantra, I got through there with no experience, no experiencer. But the truth is, there was no experience, no experiencer. It was just the mantra that helped me to have the understanding of this. And so to say that there are continuous tests, once you know yourself in a real sense, whatever this body's going through are just play of consciousness. So there's nothing really more to learn. It's just understanding then. Understanding will deepen the more things sort of appear to be happening. The understanding will deepen. I am not body. I was not body. I'm not going to remain the body. If body's not my identity, then these things that appear to be happening that my mind says are so urgent, they're not true. Mm-hmm. I'm formless. Master says I'm formless. I've experienced this formless nature for myself, just I, without the addition of anything. This is the reality.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess there's no need for a further testing if you've already passed the test.
Well, and the test all occurs within consciousness. And as long as you're identified with a body in space and time, creating a story, then there could be tests. But when you know yourself in a real sense, you see, and there's just seeing, but there's no identification with a seer seeing things. There's just seeing. Speaking, there's speaking happening, but there's no identification with someone speaking or with some kind of instrument of speaking. It's just speaking. And the seeing is, they're seeing. But you don't really say, oh, there's a seer, because no seer is created. It's formless seer. Seer is seeing. Where to locate that seer? Could you say, oh, the seer is here? No, because there's no concept of being identified with a body. There's no pressure of body knowledge. There's seeing. So to say, oh, find the seer. Well, the seer, where is the seer located? It's formless seer. Then somebody calls you or talks to you. You say, oh, look, yes, this body is here. Now there's activity. There's speaking and all this sort of stuff happening. But there's no identification with this because you're formless. One of the things that was nice about this book I read is it said, this was actually The Bird's Way. I was reading a little bit this morning. I like to read just a little bit of each book as kind of a morning wake up thing to get myself going while I'm listening to Kakadarate. So it said, who would you be without thought? And I thought, wow, that's a very nice thing. Like, think about who you would be without thought. how would a test come without thought? How would seeing come without thought? What would it be like to move around in this world without thought?
That sounds impossible.
But that's the reality.
I think that's what Ranjit calls thoughtless thought.
Yeah. It's just kind of spontaneous awareness in the moment of whatever needs to be done. Like we talked about, pick up the water, drink it, and put it back down. But there's no thought process. There's no thinking about anything. It's just, that's why I say seeing. You say, okay, so many people say, oh, find the seer or whatever. Seer is formless seer. There's seeing. There is no seer. There's no local identification of a seer. And therefore, the things that are seen aren't processed in accordance with an object that's perceiving some other object. There is just seeing. Same with speaking. Speaking is just speaking. There's no concept of one object is speaking to another object. There's just speaking. There's listening, hearing. But the formless seer, the awareness in all of this is hearing through ears and seeing through eyes and all that, but it's formless, and you absolutely know you're formless. So even though there's a body available, it's just a telescope that kind of peeks inside this illusory world, but there's no concept of this telescope is anything other than that, just a telescope, just an instrument that allows this seeing to happen, because in the space can't see space. So it needs some sort of an instrument to be able to see inside itself. And the selfless self uses this body instrument to see inside itself. Oh, look, this is the manifestation. Of course, we don't say this is the manifestation. We say this is the world. But the unmanifest is observing the manifestation within the manifestation using a telescope to see inside, called this body. And that's why we compare it to dream, because it's a perfect example. In dream, you're doing the same thing. You lay down at night, you're having a nice sleep. It stirs, I exist. Boom, dream world is created. Dream character is the object or the instrument to see inside the dream that's been created formlessly in consciousness by the formless seer. The dream character that you're perceiving yourself as within the dream, again, where's the seer? Seer is formless seer. If you go one step back, seer has his eyes closed, laying down, his or hers, eyes closed, laying down. So how are you seeing this dream? How are you participating in this dream? Formlessness, using form in the moment to participate in some sort of storyline or imaginings. You know, you're inside the dream and it's a nice sunny day and suddenly you decide to go for a jog. Where did that thought come from? It didn't come from your little dream body guy. It was just a thought flowing. And it was caught by your identification as, oh, it's a nice sunny day, let me go for a jog. But the you that's actually jogging is not experiencing jogging, except through the illusion produced by this dream state, this dream consciousness. And again, consciousness is only one. There's not a separate dream consciousness and a separate waking consciousness. The things that appear to separate them are identification with the body form as myself. I am awake or I am sleeping. This is kind of the bridge or the separation, like the walls in the ashram and the walls in the toilet. This is the separation. I am somebody dreaming, I am somebody awake. So there's an appearance of separation within consciousness by an object in consciousness that appears to be separate from those two states in which it appears and is only an appearance.
But while that's going on, there isn't the ability to step back and see it. You know, in the waking state, you can step back and say, oh, okay, this is a dream. But in the dream, you're not able to do that, or it doesn't seem like that. Unless you're talking about die. What?
When you die in your dream, i.e. you wake up.
Yeah.
Then your dream body is dead because it no longer exists. So right. We could call it that when you die in your dream and you wake up, the dream body no longer exists. You're not using it. You probably won't dream that same dream body again,
right?
In the same way. So that body is dead. Of course, the one that dreamed the body is still going and can dream many bodies, but that particular dream body is dead because you've woken up. So in this long dream, this waking state, you won't wake up until this dream body is no longer available, or this waking body, we call this instrument. When this instrument is no longer available, then you'll no longer be having this dream of waking. That's where the separation seems to appear, is because I'm identified with a body form as myself. So therefore there's a waking dream and there's a dream or a sleeping dream. But the sleeping dream is over when the dream body dies and I wake up. And the waking dream is over when this body basically dies and I wake up. And then both dreams are finished because I'm no longer projecting all of this through consciousness. I just simply am. But without a food body in which consciousness can appear, and then the witness, so to speak, the awareness of this dream consciousness is then there, because, oh, there's a food body and there's an awareness of this consciousness, because now there's an object to perceive through. So, oh, look at that. So that I am that. And this is the same in the dream. You know, you lay down and sleep. It's not right away that you have a whole world projected, because you're kind of in that kind of fuzzy, just die. Oh, dream's about to appear. Boom. World is created. Dream character. All these dream characters. There's speaking within the dream. There's a sun within the dream. There's rivers in the dream. There's cars in the dream. But you are the power behind all of it, of course. And you're only having this dream so long as this dream body sustains the consciousness that you are aware of. Once this dream body is gone, there's no longer dream consciousness. There's no awareness of anything. We call that deep sleep then, because now there's just awareness, but nothing to be aware of, because there hasn't been a stirring in consciousness, which then creates this concept of seeing things. Until then, you go through deep sleep and you go through to the waking state, and then you open your eyes and now there's stuff to see again, but it's all within consciousness. But now that awareness is no longer just aware and alive with nothing to be aware of, as in deep sleep. It's continuous, of course, because if it wasn't, then there would be no waking up on the other side. It would be like, okay, I no longer know myself, and there's nothing other than that. That's not a layer on me. I dissolve along with it. Then there's no waking up tomorrow morning because I'm dissolved along with this. But because awareness has nothing to be aware of, but is there, this subtle sense of presence, whatever you want to call it, then upon awakening, then there are layers added to it, and awareness is now able to be aware of objects appearing in consciousness, because there's movement, there's things going on in the unmoving. When this body can no longer sustain that essence, and the consciousness can't manifest in a body, the awareness is there of this, but there's nothing to be aware of. The last thing will be, you'll be aware that there's no longer awareness. But then there'll be no awareness of this because there's nothing else. All those things that you could be aware of are no longer appearing. So there's nothing to be aware of. There's just you. You are the background, the reality.
Well, so that sounds like death. If there's nothing, you know, it's like a mini death when you are in deep sleep.
But and there's then, no life.
What?
All this life is appearing within consciousness. That's the false. You're not having this life. There's no life here. This is all. This is just appearance in consciousness, a very long dream.
Right.
For you in the reality, it's not like death, because this is just the imagination. You're no longer imagining, and you're there.
But in death, there's no longer an imagination. There's nothing. So there's nothing to worry about, because you're not going to be there to notice it.
Well, but again, then you from that concept, there would be an individual who's aware of death.
Oh.
But you won't be aware of death.
No.
So then there's no death.
Right. Is that why there's no death? Because there's no one to be aware of it.
Well, there's no birth.
Oh, there's no birth.
Birth is just the appearance of I exist or I am. Food, body, consciousness, boom, world is created. You see it as an object within the dream. So you believe that you're born and you're something inside of something. But this is not true.
Formless
is formless. We talk about formlessness so much that it becomes then a concept
of
what formless is like. But formless is without attributes. This is where you get tongue-tied, because how can you describe something that's everything and the absence of all that seems to appear? Because all of this appearance is within you.
I don't know. It sounds like after the body goes, you're back at square one, which is where you were before the body was born. So what's the point? If you're just going to go around a big circle, something manifests, whatever causes that, I don't know. Whatever causes the movement in consciousness that creates whatever the movement is that creates the body. And then, you know, there's a certain number of, you know, a long dream, like you say. And then at the end, when the body leaves and consciousness leaves, you're back at square one. I mean, so like, what's the point?
Well, you've never left square one. See, that's the thing. The unmoving is unmoving. Uh-huh. All of this life, everything you've ever experienced, everything you've ever thought, or dreamed, or touched, or imagined, or done, is within the bubble of illusion, the bubble of consciousness.
Yeah.
Because of identification with an object within consciousness as this is me, but this is not you. You're prior to consciousness. After consciousness, you are there. Before consciousness, you are. Consciousness has appeared to you. That's why Maharaj says, knock, knock on the door. Who's there? Nobody's there, but somebody had to be there to say nobody's there. There had to be something, your own selfless self, for this I am, this sense of existence, to appear. Otherwise, to whom would the sense of I exist appear? That which existed, which had no prior knowledge of its existence, and yet was all of everything because there was nothing other. And then the sense of existence came, and through this sense of existence, a consciousness was projected and basically imagining began. And all of this just began, and forms appeared and disappeared and appeared and disappeared. And the concept of time was created because of objects within this appearance saying, I am an object in time, experiencing time. I'm watching this body age. I was born in 1968. I died in, well, let's not say that, but let's, you know, I lived for 50, 60 years or whatever. So that is just an object, an appearance within the consciousness. And you have nothing to do with it. Just as the dreamer dreaming, all those dream characters, what you're saying is, when they die, they go back to where they were. Yes, they go back to the non-existent state.
Right.
Existence is there, but there's no knowing of this existence until this dream character appears and says, oh, I exist.
But then after the body goes, you can't even do that.
After the what?
Well, it seems like, I guess the question is there, once the, you know, there's this experience of awareness, then after the body goes, isn't there's no awareness? There's nothing. It's not awareness as a separate being, but no. Just universal awareness.
There's no awareness of anything because there's nothing other. There's nothing above this awareness to be aware of.
Oh, I see. There's nothing. There's no way to step back because you're already back.
Exactly. You are yourself. You are reality. There's not like reality and then some underlying reality underneath the reality, because that's what you call the illusory concepts. There really was no.
I think the point of it.
No fish. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Andrew.
I was just going to say, I think the point of it, at least for me, is that, I think Siddhar Meshwada he talks about such a thing as self-knowledge or self-realization, then devotion. And he says, he puts the stress on devotion, and it's basically, you know, while we're in the body, the point of it is the devotional aspect. I mean, with the knowledge, you have to have the knowledge, of course, but then it's just that sense of love for being with selfless self, or just being selfless self. It's just kind of a devotional kind of thing, which I think gives a lot of juice to life, you know, this moment here.
Yeah, when you're remaining with your selfless self, it's a fountain of bliss.
Right.
There's no disturbances of any kind. Your mind is no longer bothering you because you're not identified with anything that it can poke at and say, look at this. Mind is gone. You're thoughtless. Devotion, definitely. I mean, I've talked about before, bowing to all the masters in the kitchen and in the bedroom and at night, and New Year's Eve was spent, as I've been spending New Year's Eve since 2015, pushing play on the YouTube video playlist for Ramakant Maharaj, going to like kind of sleeping, but you can't really sleep, you're kind of sleeping and not sleeping, and just listening to that all night long, into the next, oops, that's my son calling. Sorry about that. I'll call him back. He's Skyping me. But yeah, that is powerful, because every New Year's Eve I've done that since seeing Maharaj, I'll go and in the nighttime of New Year's Eve, retire about maybe 8-9 o'clock with the headphones and the continuous playlist of Maharaj from YouTube and all the different, you know, the devotees that are asking questions, he's answering questions, and just, it's amazing. You wake up the next morning and you are just energized being. So I would highly recommend that. But that's the devotion to selfless self, is you're just, it's constant devotion. And see, logical thinking, trying to think as if Kathleen was actually existing, is going to be painful. Because then you start to think, oh, what about Kathleen's life? Nothing I did mattered and this and that. There's no Kathleen. There's formless presence and an appearance of Kathleen. Spirit clicked with the body and you say, I. That's how Maharaj talks about it. But that I is not Kathleen. Right. That I continues after Kathleen, was there before Kathleen, and will be there after Kathleen. Maharaj, he cuts it straight. He says, Kathleen, you were formless. before birth. You are formless after birth. You are formless right now. And after this body falls, so-called death, you are formless. You are unchanging, absolute. All of the changes are appearing within you or on the background. Whatever you take yourself to be, you are not. Whatever you're seeing is absolutely illusion. So there is no gain, no loss in being in this world.
Yeah, I guess, I guess I was trying to get a sense of what it must be like to be you say that, but yet, there's so much form around that it's, hard to imagine what it's like to be no awareness with no form.
Well, you're that now. And yeah. I mean, even what I was explaining, if you can see, you see objects around you, but you're not identified as a seer. There's just seeing.
Right.
There's no object here that I can say, this is from where the seeing is coming. No, it's just seeing, hearing, same thing.
Yeah.
Tasting, same thing. It's only identification with a body. And thoughts are basically what are the illusory trap to place you within a body. Thoughts about you, thoughts that this is important or that's important. That's why Maharaj says, don't get carried away with the mind. Good thoughts come, bad thoughts come, emotions come, clouds come, but they go. You are there. You're there and there always. Where all experience ends, there you are. Sorry, I've been talking to customers all day, so I'm losing my
Thanks. Thank you.
You know, like this body is like a cloud, isn't it? I mean, like all these things come and go. It's this body is like another one of the clouds that's just coming and going, basically.
But it causes no trouble. Because Once you identify, you say, oh, I'm formless. This is a five elemental body. I have to give it back to the five elements. And I can look out my window at any given time of day and see that there's a disturbance in the five elements quite naturally. Some days it's very windy, some days cloudy, some days rainy, some days blistering hot, some days ice cold. All these are five elemental changes. But I am not an element. This five elemental body is on loan to the formless presence to sort of see what's going on inside this form world. But you're formless and the world is occurring within you. It's on your spontaneous presence, this world appears. Without presence, you see no world. This you know. If there's no presence in this body, it's a lump of goo. Which it was, mom and dad got together and created a lump of goo. Then when this lump of goo understood existence and somehow existence as something separate, then this I am, this body, started happening. And from there, all the illusory concepts were dumped on your head by anyone and everyone that you knew. Mom, dad, sister, brother, cousins, teachers. Friends, a slew of people just took buckets of concepts and dumped it on that lump of goo until you really believed that you were this body. That's why, again, Maharaj talks about the ants. Presence within the body, you pour water, the ants run because they want to preserve the body. Presence within the body of an ant believes that if that body is no longer available, there will no longer be existence. This is not true. There will be existence, but there will be no body instrument above, so to speak, to be aware of. Just pure existence. And no existence, consciousness, bliss is also a concept within the body-based illusion. There is no existence, consciousness, bliss without a body, because there's nothing you can use as an instrument to sense any of these or to experience any of these. Why Maharaj says no experience, no experiencer, nothing is there.
No, it's just that the whole thing is hard because it seems like it would be boring if there's no...
But there's no thought process. There's no objects. There's no... You're pure absolute. Like, there's nothing above you. There's nothing around you. There's nothing of any kind. So this world manifests and plays and does all this, and these different various objects that you appear to be at the time. But it's nothing, just as in a dream. If somebody said, okay, Kathleen, we're going to give you this medicine and you're going to sleep for a week, you might have some really amazing, fantastic, long life dreams. Maybe even the little people in your dream grew old and some of them had children and stuff. But it's all a dream. It never was. There's nothing being lost. This experience of existence and all the appearances within consciousness come and go.
Yeah.
Not come and go.
It seems though that we get attached to the movie, you know, to the somehow there's this, even though there's pain, there's also the pleasure, the bliss of existence. And I think it's because of not wanting to see, of losing that, it feels like this that would be lost, but I don't know. You're saying that it doesn't, nothing's lost.
And because nothing's happening. I mean, and if you're laying there in bed, dying your last breath, there will be awareness of this. There will be awareness, as long as this body is available, there will be an awareness of this. So that last moment, you will absolutely understand that you're all of this. You're all of this functioning. You're not an individual. This is, there's no local identification because you're all of this. There's no birth, no death. There's no, they talk about the breath, for instance, the prana or whatever, and it comes out of the body and it becomes universal. Well, this play, this existence, it's all a movement. It's all a dance of lights and such. And accept yourself as no God, no Brahman, no Paramatman, no Master. Nothing is there. But there won't be the experience of nothing. Like, even you watch horror shows, a lot of times they say, oh, we're going to put you in this box and deny all your senses. So here you are aware of the denial of senses. And this is a torture. They use this in like other countries to make people talk. They put you in this little box, you can't see. You're floating, I think, in water or whatever, so you can't feel the weight of your body or any, all your senses are numb. But the awareness of this is still very active. So you're aware of the non-sensations and it drives you insane. But this is not like that because there's nothing above to be aware of. You're between. And see, using this body form, you can be between knowingness and no knowingness. That's no mind. Because that's where the seer is not. The seeing is. And the objects that are seen are not seen as separate because there's no creation of a separate seer seeing things. There's just seeing. Oh. And now I'm seeing it's 8:13.
Thank you. Jai Guru.
I think your son wants to touch base with you.
Yes, he popped up here a couple times.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good day.